The Organ mit Brother auf Flux FM am Montagnachmittag. Beim Stichwort Orgel denken viele Menschen ja erstmal an öde Kirchenbesuche. Die wenigsten denken an experimentelle Musik, an moderne Interpretationen oder gar wilde Improvisationen. Bei mir im Studio ist jetzt aber ein Mann, der genau in die Richtung abfeuert, was er hat. Cameron Carpenter, einer der weltbesten Orgelperformer, erstellt die traditionellen Techniken auf den Kopf und hat das Instrument Orgel ordentlich entstaubt. Seit ein paar Jahren lebt er in Berlin und tourt von hier aus und von Los Angeles aus durch die Welt. Jetzt gerade beehrt er wieder mal das Publikum seiner Wahlheimat und spielt im Babylon-Kino in Mitte die Stummfilmorgel und begleitet Stummfilme in diesem sagenumwobenen Kino. Jetzt ist er bei mir im Studio und hat auch Tickets dabei für die nächste Ausführung von Nosferatu. Zunächst einmal hello and welcome, Cameron.
Vielen Dank.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Doing okay, a little hot.
A little hot, yeah, that's true.
Sehr heißer.
Ja, aber schön, oder?
Ja.
Sehr schön.
Genau.
We will mix languages a little bit, Babylon style.
We'll try. Meine Deutsch ist sehr, sehr schlecht, aber ich muss lernen.
Wie lange wohnst du jetzt schon hier? How long have you been here?
4,5 Jahre, aber auch in Los Angeles.
Ja.
Und in Berlin ist es ist sehr schlecht für Deutsch, if you're used to Los Angeles.
Everybody speaks English.
And everybody is coming from the U.S. here in
that's
summer.
True.
We know this, of course.
But maybe one day the Berliners will feel the same when they go to Los Angeles and everybody will have a Berlin accent? No, it's not going to happen.
I wish that were. Los Angeles would be so much more interesting.
Oh, I've read today that your fascination with the organ started when you were a little kid and you were looking at a picture of an organist who added a live soundtrack to a silent movie. Now, how crazy is that you're playing that very role now, 30 years later?
Well, it's a little crazy for me because für mich die Orgel ist nicht von Kirche, aber von Kino und von Theater und Glamour und Event und Konzert.
Ja.
Und ich habe keine Kirche, wenn ich war eine Kinder.
Ja.
My parents fortunately kept me out of the church, so I got a different view on the organ and this informs my understanding of it until now.
Yeah, and it's funny that the thing that kind of triggered you to become an organist is basically the same job that you're doing right now.
Well,
right?
It's the Babylon Kino it's a little living room for me. It's a fun. It's not a normal classic concert, of course, and so I can bisschen entspannt on the orgel and share with you know the movie, and also I'm serving the movie in that setting, not
so
not,
you have
not
to take yourself
concert.
Back a little bit, right, as an organist,
well,
or
you have to throw yourself into it more, but you're serving the music in a different way than you would be if you were just playing a composed work or entertaining an audience.
Yeah. So how do you prepare for those movies? Do you watch them a lot, or do you try to get into them while improvising, or how do you do
well,
that?
Well, in a strange way, you don't prepare. I mean, you learn the movie and you know the movie, and I try to be really aware of the social themes. Mm-hmm. For instance, in last week's film Metropolis, mm-hmm. you know, we have this incredible power struggle between the high upper classes and the lower classes, and religious symbology and all sorts of other things, and so I wanted to have I used some music from Jesu Meiner Freude, and I used the Internationale and We Will Overcome, and music of civil rights, you know.
Ah, cool.
So there's some attempt to do that. The Orgel in the Babylon ist eine historische Orgel, and so it's not a modern instrument in the same way that I'd be used to, or that I've the organs I've designed, but it takes us back to the sound of 1929 because it's the only instrument in Germany that was originally installed in a cinema and not destroyed by war or otherwise
some
changed.
Some of those cinema organs, they had some special effects knobs on them, right, where you could pull.
They
a
all
thing.
Do. They
is,
all
is,
do.
Is it in Babylon too?
In Babylon, it has a lot of effects.
If there's a tram coming, you go like
you can't exactly. There's literally a stop that says Eisenbahn.
Oh, wow.
And one that says Regen und Sturm und Glocken, Kirchenglocken and Siren, all sorts of things. Große Trommel, Pauke,
that's
all sorts of stuff. And the thing is that, you know, a skillful use of that can skip over, you know, just the campiness of it and actually add something to the film that one doesn't have to stop to realize what it is.
Yeah.
A good silent film accompaniment, you know, if I'm doing my job, you don't even really know that I'm playing.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's a
but
a
that's
great,
a hard thing to do, actually.
If
right?
you have an ego as big as mine, yeah. it's damn near impossible.
it's basically the same as if you were a boom operator in a movie. If you've done your job well, nobody knows about you. Nobody talk. But if you haven't, one could see the boom.
Well, if the you know we've all heard scores that you know movie scores that are too dominant.
Yeah.
I love the movies of the 30s and 40s, but I'm always amazed at how present the music is.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, you hear a film like Interstellar, and you realize how the music still can be part of the character.
Yeah.
But there has to be the right balance.
Yeah, and it's an interesting thing that so many people have tried out when you cut away the music from a movie, and there are those super dramatic moments where you were crying in the cinema, and then you watch the same scene without music, and you go like,
it's dead. It's flat.
Boring.
Yes. Well,
that happened to her. I don't care. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Yeah. We've mentioned that for most people, the organ is an instrument that's part of their religion. It's the soundtrack of their lives. They get married, the organ plays. Some of the family dies, the organ. You know, it's the soundtrack of their lives, and it's an instrument that's literally part of a church's architecture. And so often, you know, it's built into the church. But you always say that's it's an instrument that you have to get out of the church and onto the street. Why is that so important for you?
Well, it's important for me because I want to have a career.
You don't want to turn into a Christian.
No, and the other thing is the organ's a fabulous instrument. It's centuries of history. It's one of the gateways to you know, so much of Western civilization. Until 1877, it was the most complex machine built by man. Not just the most complex musical instrument, but the most common device. But the problem is, none of that has the slightest impact on the fact that the pipe organ as we know it today is totally incompatible with commercial music making.
Yeah.
And if you happen to be like me, a musician who simply wants their work to be heard and particularly has a different view on, you know, centuries of culture than the traditionalists have, you need an instrument that can allow you to take that to where music is made. And that's what I've designed, the International Touring Organ.
You've designed an instrument that you can tour, you can take on tour with you, although you still need a truck.
A truck, but so does every rock band. The International Touring Organ, it's a supercomputer. It's the world's most advanced digital organ, and in my opinion, one of the first artistic digital organs.
Yeah.
And the idea that, you know, the world's most complicated and culturally long-lived musical instrument wouldn't cross the musical divide of digital technology, it's unthinkable.
Yeah.
So it's a fabulous moment, you know. It's exciting as a musician to get to see that happening in our own time.
And it's an instrument that you can adapt to the size of a room, right?
Scalar, although we tend to use. I mean, it has a huge sound system, and we use it everywhere because it's so extensive and so.
But then, how will that influence your upcoming compositions and the way that you choose compositions from other composers that you want to play? Because I bet that there's possibilities on that instrument that haven't existed for any organ before.
Well, there very much are, and I have a vision to use this technology over the next decades to try to create an internationally standardized digital organ for organists, as there is for the piano and every other instrument, at a very high artistic level. But unquestionably, right now, it's influencing everything I do because it's more accurate.
Yeah.
And however nostalgic we must be, you know, we sometimes are, not me, but some people, about the pipe organ, it's still just a machine, and the more accurate the machine, the better the work the artist can produce, of course.
Then talking about the past and talking about traditions, is it a hard audience that you're playing for when it comes to classical concerts? Because I think that there are still, especially in Germany, that there still are people who go like, no, there's one or two notes more that he has played there. It's not the traditional way to play the Mozart. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's look, actually, I mean, I have two answers. The first is that Germany, of all places, has been incredibly welcoming and understanding to me. So I'm grateful for that.
Yeah.
And they've been, it's actually been the place that had Die große Freiheit for me to bauen diese Orgel, which I could not in the United States. But all of classical music, not just in Germany, all of classical music elsewhere, it's utterly in crisis.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I walk in here to Flux FM and see the way that the rest of music, you know, and I see it all the time because I get to work with lots of different media and different artists.
Yeah.
But still, as a classical musician, you thirst and you long to be part of the broader family of classical music and of music in general, rather. Yeah. And most classical musicians, I think, have less of a desire than I do to cross that divide. But it's, you know, it's a cultural crisis here in the United States, everywhere. And so,
I think it's kind of like self-made, because the classical people have always kind of like, they had always had the circle around them, and they were not very welcoming to people who were not classically trained, or, you know.
Well, it depends what view of history you have. You know, that's a very postmodern thing, and you're right in the sense that was the attitude of the purists, the sort of rise of academicism. Mm-hmm. But that only goes back to roughly the 1940s or so.
Before that,
classical music wouldn't really have been called classical music. Sure. It was just music, you know.
And that's why it made Liszt a pop star as well.
But on the other hand, would we really want to be living in a time when women couldn't vote and you didn't have easy access to medicine and the Kaiser was still around?
Let's not go that way.
Forward.
Yes. Let's listen to a song that you've put out last year. It's a Gordon Lightfoot composition.
Mm-hmm. If you could read my mind, this is a really good example of how I straddle the lines between sincerity, camp, theater, and complete ridiculousness.
That's what you say.
I'm happy to say it.
Carpenter und seine Version des Gordon Lightfoot Klassikers If You Could Read My Mind. Und wir haben uns gerade im Studio das in voller Lautstärke reingezogen und haben festgestellt, dieses Frequenzspektrum, das ist schon erstaunlich. All those frequencies and the size of the instrument, we can really feel it. And I just said, I can kind of like understand people who were like, this is the instrument of God. Because, you know, there's so many frequencies and it's so big and it sounds so big and it kind of like transport, you might think that it transports the information of all the world or something like that.
In a certain sense, it does. It's not hard to see why it's viewed mystically. On the other hand, it's one of those strange paradoxes that we have in our time, you know, that such a great thing like this, it's still part of the wallpaper, really. Mm-hmm. In a sense, you know, it's a good thing that the organ comes from God, because really, who but God would care? You know, I mean, that's the challenge that I have in the world, but I can't do otherwise.
Yeah, because I've read that you were the resident organ player in a church for a few years as well. How do you approach that when you're an atheist and when you're not believing in God?
With gritted teeth.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I hated it.
Okay.
That was when I was a student at Juilliard, and actually it wasn't complete torture, because the first organ that I ever designed, which was a prototype for the organ we just heard, was installed in the East Village in a church, and sort of by default I ended up playing the organ there. But I'm a terrible church organist. You wouldn't want to hear me play a hymn.
There's Satan, I can hear Satan.
Yes, yes.
Satan in him.
Hymns in the key of 666.
Yeah, that sounds nice. Gospel for the godless.
Well, the organ is actually a great instrument for Satanists.
Yeah, yeah. I can say
but
so.
But I mean, Satanists are sort of the other side of the same coin.
So, and they don't exist without a God on the other. So that's not the way that we're going, right?
Well, I don't know.
Well, you're definitely pulling out all the stops while performing. Sorry for the pun. But
that's where it comes from. You couldn't have used it more appropriately.
Yeah, but I want to know, isn't that something that old school organ players did have to do as well, but nobody saw them? Because it's a very physical instrument. You have to use both of your legs, both of your hands, so you can't play without your body.
But they still do. I mean, that's one of the things that is so important and so interesting about the touring organ, is that it's also physically designed to be seen. It's for television, it's for recording, it's for the concert hall. And it helps me to emphasize the fact that the organ is a performative art.
Yeah.
It is a performance art. And it is played with the whole body. You have a keyboard for the feet. But it's also interesting to see, and it's particularly widespread in Europe, that the design of the organ architecturally hides the person from view, as if to emphasize that this comes only from God and not from man.
There's no man involved.
There's no man, only God. It's the man behind the curtain, literally.
Yeah, but then when there's
or
a movie,
the woman women behind the curtain. Don't forget about that.
Don't forget the women. But that's something that when the movie pans behind the organ, then there's a madman behind there, right? it's got to be a madman.
Well, nowhere madder than in the case of yours truly.
Yeah. how's working with labels when it comes to the business side of things? Because you're an individualist, you have your own approach to every single aspect of your art. So I kind of imagine that it must be hard to work with the business side of it sometimes, because the things that I've experienced with labels is sometimes that they want to talk about something to you, but they don't really know about stuff. But they're the label. So
you can't hold them to account for that, because it's my responsibility as the musician and in this case as the entrepreneur and the inventor. Mm-hmm. Or the originator, to have the responsibility of the vision to make sure that they can help me achieve it. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, again, in the world of popular music, you've got so many labels and these incredible niches, you know, for country music and for hip hop and all of these different, you know, there's all these emerging things and it's continually changing. For music that's classical, we have a shrinking world that we have to be careful and there's this intense competition.
Yeah.
So in for an organist of any kind to have a major label recording contract like I do with Sony is all but unheard of today.
Yeah.
And to have the contract that I have that any opera singer would be jealous of.
Yeah.
That gives me, you know, all kinds of benefits and opportunities and, you know, allows me to make basically an album a year and with other options and other things. I mean, I have to say I've been incredibly pleased with working with Sony and I'm very, very lucky to have them in my life. So I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, I really think it has to do with your personality, because I can imagine that you are fighting for certain things when it comes to negotiating. I bet there's some classically trained musicians or some opera singers who'd be like, I'm happy if I get a contract.
Oh no, but that's the trouble, you see, and because we in classical music are so consumed with this internal crisis, and partly it's a crisis of courage.
Yeah,
because you have to have the gazongas to so to speak. I don't think you're going to translate that. I hope you won't. To push your vision of how life should be and how your instrument should be and how you want the world to see you. And of course, I find the instrument of the organ not only not holy, but totally theatrical, sometimes very ridiculous, sometimes very violent and dynamic, can be campy, can be over the top. Mm-hmm. And that's like me, you know?
Yeah.
So I if you have your personality in your music, it'll get heard by the world. Yeah. I really think that still is true.
Yeah. Young people, I hope that you've noticed what camera just
you
said.
You young people out
young
there.
Classically trained musicians out there. Keep on training.
Listen to your elders and your seniors, which I'm rapidly becoming, I might add.
But you just mentioned that an organ can be over the top and the performance on the organ can be over the top.
It should be in some ways.
When do you know how to stop? Because I think in every art, that's a really hard question, you know?
Well, that's Jean Cocteau. Uh-huh. Remember, it's Jean Cocteau who admonishes us that the artist must know how to go too far.
Yeah, I am.
And you only can figure it out by giving it a shot.
So
there really are no metrics in these things. Yeah, you just have to try it.
So young people out there, stop taking notes. We're done now. So you're going to be at Babylon Mitte on the 8th of August, and you're going to play the organ to Wilhelm Murnau's classic film Nosferatu.
That's right, Nosferatu. And then
a week
later,
do you have any ideas for that already? Did you prepare something or?
No, I'm just thinking about it. You know, I still got the week. Yeah. I figure, about 20 minutes before I'll decide. I'll have another glass of wine and figure it out at the last minute.
Damn, it must be nice to have your brain kind of.
Well, remember, when you're used to playing Wagner and Bach and these other things and meeting deadlines and I've got to write a concerto over the summer for the Pittsburgh Symphony and all this stuff, you know, to accompany a silent film in a free-form way is practically a luxury. It's like taking a break.
Yeah, okay.
So
cool.
It's great fun for me. And the Babylon is a great place. You know, it's like the living room of Mitte in some way. It's you can go there. You can go there anytime and see something. They only show the greatest and most eccentric things.
That's true.
And it's a wonderful old room. It's a miracle it survived the war. It's a miracle it survived Reconstruction and all of that.
That's true.
So it's one of those gems that we have. have in town. And it's one of those things as an American that I try to do my best to appreciate about being in Germany, because I'm grateful to be here.
Cool. And then we can invite some people to come and visit you on the 8th of August. Wer also vorbeigehen möchte im Babylon Mitte am 8. August, wenn Cameron Carpenter Nosferatu vertont, den Klassiker von Wilhelm Murnau. Wer dahin möchte, der ruft mich jetzt an unter der 030 2000 9000. Berlin 2000 9000. Das ist die Nummer zum Glück. Wir laden euch ein, den Film Nosferatu von Friedrich Wilhelm Murnau nochmal zu gucken. In der Originalversion aus dem Jahr 1922, vertont von Cameron Carpenter. That's nice. So what are your near future plans? What's happening next? Are you working on an album with the International Touring Organ?
Yeah, we're doing an album that'll record this fall, and then I'm writing my first concerto for organ and orchestra, which will be played in Europe and America.
Oh wow!
And that's
organ and orchestra.
It's one of the greatest combinations. It's hard to write for. It's way over the top because it's basically two orchestras, yeah. Of course, and it's written for the International Touring Organ, so it's even more, you know, obscene. But I'm looking at combining a bunch of social justice ideas and themes, like, you know. I'm thinking about taking these military American racist songs like Dixie, yeah. And, you know, Hail to the Chief and lots of other things, which have, some of them are really questionable history,
yeah.
And overlaying them with American spiritual songs and, you know, Negro spirituals and civil rights anthems and things.
Yeah.
I find that one could, I'm thinking about making some kind of giant contrapuntal fight between those ideas.
That's interesting.
You know, one has to write about what you know now.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And that's very rare in classical music,
and
by the way,
that's true. And the times that we live in, they kind of like scream for something like that.
I think they do.
You know that policemen in the United States have already killed over 500 people this year.
This is a huge international tragedy.
Yeah.
That's happening in the United States, and I think as artists we have to be at least aware that, you know, if we don't address those things in our work, then we're notable by our silence.
Yes,
I've never been able to accept the idea that politics is not for everyone. The idea of politics is that you're of the body of humanity,
mm-hmm.
And so you must have a position on such things. The other thing is interesting as a composer is that, of course, in the popular imagination, the organ is a great musical symbol for the establishment.
Yeah.
Of course, it's the sound of the establishment. So if you wanted to create a piece about the wealth gap, for instance,
yeah.
I'm thinking about the first movement, The Haves and Have-Nots, where the orchestra represents, you know, the common man, this struggling man, and the organ represents the wealthy,
yeah.
The 1%. Now, that's an interesting, I think you could take that somewhere.
Yeah,
basically.
And I'm keen on looking at or listening to that piece of music one day.
Thanks. Well, let's see if I can write it as well as I described it.
I mean, the description was perfect already, and I'm looking forward to it. So, Cameron, I want to thank you for visiting us. Please come and visit us again as soon as you've finished some new materials. You have something we can talk about.
I love that.
Great pleasure to be talking to you. Here's Phoenix with Listomania, a song that I want to play for
vielen
you.
Vielen Dank.
Und viel, viel Glück für das Babylon jetzt und für die nächsten Schritte und bis bald, Cameron. Mach's
vielen
gut.
Dank.
Danke
Tschüss.
Dir. Ciao.